Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz and my guest today is Gabriel Weinberg. He is the founder and CEO of DuckDuckGo, the search engine that doesn't track you. And he's also the co-author of a book we're going to talk about today, Traction, How Any Startup Can Achieve Explosive Growth. So Gabriel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Hey, let's talk a little bit for a minute about DuckDuckGo. What's it like being in the search engine business these days?
It is always interesting. It is such a huge market, and it's changing so rapidly. As you know, half of searches now are on mobile. I don't know if anyone realizes that.
Oh yeah.
Most people don't necessarily think of themselves search on mobile, but it's true. And so things are changing just so rapidly.
Yeah. So DuckDuckGo is probably one of the top, still probably one of the top 500, 600 sites online, maybe traffic wise.
Metric you follow? Fair. And then, we're included in the iPhone now as a default search engine option, and in Mozilla Firefox. So, it's really easy to switch to us in basically any browser.
And so your big idea for starting yet another search engine is?
This is a while ago, right? So I started working on this in 2007. My initial impetus was to improve my own Google results, if you can believe that. So I wanted to remove more spam and content farms and add more instant answers, like going directly to Wikipedia and IMDb. But shortly after I launched, I also realized, to make the best search experience would be to not track people. And so one of the things we do to differentiate from Google is, we are a private search engine. So when you search on DuckDuckGo, you're anonymous, which means all those ads that follow you around the internet, that no longer happens as much. People also don't realize they get charged different prices on retailers, which people are starting to get annoyed about. Yeah. So all that digital footprint is reduced when you use DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, and the results. I mean, I'm a fan, and I think the results just are less cluttered. I mean, it's ridiculous how much real estate is used up in the ads now on a Google search. It's pretty incredible. So how does one make money with a search engine like DuckDuckGo?
The unique proposition of search is you don't need to track people to make money in search. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's simply because you type in what you want. So you type in books or car or mortgage and you get a mortgage ad, and I can serve you that ad without knowing anything about you.
Yeah. So it's all based on the intent without actually adding the layers over layers that allows Google to go out and sell ads in a different way.
Yeah, and the reason for that is, people don't necessarily realize is Google runs advertising networks that go on millions and millions of sites that aren't Google.
Yeah.
And to make those effective, they need that intent across the web.
Yeah. So one of the things I think is interesting, we're going to get to talking about Traction, your book, found at tractionbook.com, is that you used a few of the things you talk about in the book to help grow DuckDuckGo, I assume.
Yeah, I mean, we ran the same framework presented in the book, and essentially, core message is find a core marketing channel out of the 19
right.
kind of universal ones we identify that'll get you to your goal. And search is so big that we've reached diminishing returns, essentially maxing out saturation of volume on the channels we've grown. So we've switched from SEO at the beginning to content marketing to social ads to PR, to business development. That was the Apple, Safari, and Mozilla deals. Each one of those was like a year, basically, of growing.
Yeah.
We started out about 10,000 searches a month. Now we're at 300 million. And we're honestly back to the drawing board at figuring out what channel to focus on next.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that because that's really the heart of the book. But one thing I'd like to suggest at least is, can we say a couple? There's at least one Goliath in search.
You can name the elephant. At
least one. And a lot of people, I think, would look at that and say, well, that's really hard because they're so big. But in some ways, does that also make them easy to pick on?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about marketing and channels and scale is – if something is really big, that means they don't want to be concerned with things that they think are too small for them, right?
Yeah.
So that enables you to go after niches and beachheads, if you will, that the big incumbents won't do. And for a lot of reasons, maybe can't do, which is kind of our thesis. Google really can't turn off their tracking spigot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we can serve as that beacon of trust for the percentage of users who really want, you know, a private, more private experience online.
And I think that's a really great point, because a lot of times people are like, well, what's my difference? How do I be different? And, you know, a lot of times looking at those little things that maybe Google does that annoys people, I'm using Google in this example, that annoys people, but as you said, they're not going to do anything about it because it also leads to billions and billions of dollars. And so going after that thing that, assuming there's somebody that values privacy and that values not being tracked and whatnot, then, you know, that's your core point of difference to go and make your beachhead on.
Yeah.
So what is traction?
So I think traction, you could look at it in two ways. One is a strict definition. Do you have it or do you not have it? I think if you have it, you have customer engagement. Yeah. So in some sense, it's customer engagement. In a more strict sense, you can measure it and say it's a point at which makes an inflection point in your company. So the amount of traction you need to raise money or be profitable or prove that you have product market fit, that's a very specific amount of customer demand that you can make quantitative.
So would you say that traction is a stage? I mean, that a startup is in traction, or some kind of company is in traction, but they're trying to move towards measured growth or something?
I think essentially traction is growth, and any company can have more traction. Yeah. They can get bigger and grow bigger. But I think you can either have traction or not have traction. And if you don't have traction, you have no real customer engagement.
So we might almost say it might be compared to momentum or something of that nature. That might be too specific, but
yeah, exactly. And to be honest, my advice to go is to get quantitative as quickly as possible. So I think step zero is to get a particular traction goal, which is like a hard number you're trying to hit, and have a reason for why that is the number you're trying to hit.
Yeah. So there's a lot of books on startups these days, and a lot of books on, in fact, a lot of money being pumped in, attention, media attention, pumped in to startups. So was there something missing from, the lean startup landscape, all the books that are out there that have gotten a lot of traction? Was there something missing that compelled you to want to add this particular chapter?
Yes. Yes. This was a passion project, many years in the making. And really, I was only doing it because I felt it there was a void there to fill.
Yeah.
And namely, that void is there's no good structured framework for getting traction. So, Lean and other things like Business Model Canvas and other mm-hmm. ones had good frameworks for, helping you figure out what product to build generally, but not exactly how to go out and find the channel that's going to get you growth. And so generally what I saw and what happened to me at DuckDuckGo when I first started was, very much focused on product, solving a customer need, but not necessarily figuring out how to market that product. And tons of startups have died just in that,
sure.
Sad after launch period.
Yeah. So could you make a case for, let's see how I was going to ask this. A lot of times people create product, even if they do nice discovery, they go out and they create this product and then they go out there and say, okay, come and get it. Could you make a case for using traction principles even before you've actually created your product to build community, to build demand, to find actually where there is a gaping need?
Yeah. I mean, my advice is to do it immediately.
Yeah.
And the metaphor I like to use is the leaky bucket, right? So when you start, you have a very leaky bucket. If you pour customers in, they're going to flow out, right? And so people's tendency is to wait and say, oh, I can't get anybody in until I get the leaks filled. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where they go wrong, because they can't actually find the leaks by themselves. You need a constant stream of fresh eyes to tell you where those leaks are. You're kind of too close to your product.
Yeah.
Additionally, if you do that, you find what you're talking about. You get additional data. You get figure out what channel to focus on, what marketing message to use, what niche to focus on. So when you actually launch, you have a credible distribution strategy. So yeah, earlier.
Yeah. So I'm speaking with Gabriel Weinberg, the author of the book Traction. You can find it at tractionbook.com. And so we've mentioned this idea of channels, and I'm going to tell you that you have 19 chapters basically going over the 19 channels that you believe are available to us as business owners today. And I'm not going to ask you to go through all 19. Buy the book. You'll get to see all those 19. But I think that I've been doing this a long time, and maybe six or eight channels is what we had when I started. started. And so I think that this idea of channels, multiple channels or more channels, presents great opportunity, but it also presents great pressure and frustration for a lot of businesses because they think they have to be in all of them. And I think that one of the things I love about your book or your framework is that you're suggesting the key to traction is focus. You want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit counterintuitive because, like you said, there's so many. But what we found in all the research and in my personal experience is when any company is really taking off, there's really one core marketing channel strategy. Now, it might be the case that, you know, a couple things feed into it. So if you're focused on content marketing, you know, you may put some paid social behind it. Or if you're focused on viral marketing, you know, it might be built off of email. But you're still focused on that one strategy. And so really the key is looking at that universe and, you know, finding that one channel that'll get you to grow. And when you think about it that way, it's a less daunting problem because you really just going through a testing period to find that channel, and then you're focusing on it.
You know, it's interesting. Of course, you are talking about startups for the most part in this book, but, you know, I've worked with thousands of businesses now, and some that, you know, I'm thinking of one in the last year that had been in business 15, 20 years, had grown to about $20 million, but was really stalled. Their channel was sales. I mean, that's pretty much how they got all their business. And so where they were really struggling was, okay, the world is changing a little. How do we now, you know, branch out into these new channels? And I think your framework is just as applicable to that somewhat mature business as it is to a startup.
Yeah, I mean, and I've used it in DuckDuckGo, and we've had that problem, you know, five times now, unfortunately. Yeah. Search engine's so big that we run into this problem, and we run into it every year. But yeah, you have to keep adjusting. It's the same. It's really the same framework. I mean, you got to find another channel that will get you that next stage of growth.
Are there certain channels in your mind that really lend themselves to startups? So if somebody came to you and you knew not that much about their business, but they asked you out in a crowd from a speaking event, hey, you know, if I'm going to focus on one or two channels, what should they be? Do you have some kind of pat answers for, yeah, these channels tend to lend themselves to startups and you should start here?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. One is when you first start out, that goal is really important, right?
Yep.
So with startups in particular, at the beginning, they're often not looking for that many customers. And so they don't have to scale it right away. And from that angle, you mentioned speaking engagements, that's one that often gets totally overlooked. Like when you're literally just starting out, often going to speak in front of the right audience can get you that initial customer base you want.
Totally agree.
Totally overlooked. Yeah. So that's one I'm always recommending. The other one is blog and content marketing, because it's the one that really helps you craft your story and most relates to, you know, figuring out what product and niche and audience you should really be focused on right away.
Yeah, and I think the nature of publishing in a public forum like that too is you have the opportunity to get some feedback. Maybe that feedback is nobody's listening, you know.
That's another reason the speaking one works too. You literally after you talk, you start actually talking to people.
Right,
you know,
right. So many of the examples. In fact, I want to go to the interviews. Let's talk about that for a second. Most of the channels you interviewed one or more players that was, you know, using one of these channels. So I'll put you on the spot as an author. Did you have a favorite interview?
Yeah, I did. I hesitate because I like all of our interviews.
Exactly. I get that out of the way.
But yeah, like Noah Kagan, who ran marketing at Mint, really has such a good eye for marketing and really ran this process well. And they, you know, they're a company that was acquired for like $200 million 18 months in, you know?
Yeah.
But he really just ran it so perfectly. He set an example of 100,000 users within 6 months, and they really made a spreadsheet of all the different channels and made different tests, eventually focused on targeting blogs. And then what I liked about him so much is what you really want to do once you focus, and in their case about targeting blogs earlier, continue to run tests within that channel to find underutilized cutting-edge tactics that really spiked their growth. And so for them, they paid personal bloggers that didn't have ads on their sites, got super high click-throughs through that. And they also did this whole velvet rope strategy where if you got invited friends early, you got to jump the line in the beta. Completely innovative stuff. And so hats off to him.
Yeah, and I'm sure when you interviewed him, he was wearing flip flops and shorts.
Yeah, right. Too. He knows how to live too.
he's got a great startup of his own now called SumoMe that puts out some great tools for WordPress blogs.
Yeah, we also recommend, by the way, use it on tractionbook.com.
So many of the examples certainly are online. Examples for natural reasons, but do you believe that some of the approaches and a lot of times the startup plumber, for example, you know, has maybe trouble saying, oh, well, that's great. You're talking about, you know, this company that sells software, so naturally they go to bloggers. Can this framework apply to that more brick and mortar mom and pop kind of business?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the channels are offline channels. And what's funny is some of the people we interviewed are the opposite. They were online businesses who grew most through offline channels. But I think that opposite can help too. And really the reality that we found was the most underutilized channels for the industry have the best like click-through rates or conversions. And so if you're the plumber and all your plumber friends are all using like the local classified ads, or whatever they're doing, you going somewhere else where no one is probably your best bet. I think the general framework of just testing different channels to find where the highest conversion is generally applicable.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because so many people get caught in that, oh, you know, nobody in our industry does that. And that might actually be some magical words.
That's a sign.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how do you find and focus on that core channel? Because believe me, I mean, I hear it every single day, you know, I got to be in this and I got to be in that and I got to be. And so, you know, how do we let people off the hook and say, no, let's find those two or three at the most?
I mean, that's where it comes quantitative. And we really say, you know, put some hard numbers as to what your cost per acquisition are in these channels. What, you know, are the scalability of them and are they the right type of customers? And if you do that and you look across channels, it's generally the case that you're getting most of your good, you know, leads from one place.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, why am I doing these other activities? Because I could focus on that one that's working and just do better at it.
Yeah.
And so that's how you need to do is you need to get into an area where you can compare and see for yourself that one's way better.
You know, one thing that I have been preaching for maybe 10 years, but certainly very hard the last 5 years as more and more people have gotten fractured in these channels is that, you know, when we work with organizations, so let's say we find sales to be their primary channel, but they know they need to branch out. Instead of just saying, okay, now we're going to do content marketing, I use this term convergence. You know, we try to find a couple channels that we can converge with sales. So we can say, okay, if we're going to do content marketing, we're going to use it to make our salespeople better, or we're going to use it to help our salespeople get involved in the customer journey at an earlier point. Not just say, okay, now we're going to run off and do content marketing and see if that works. I wonder if you've had any experience with that idea of kind of leveraging your channel that works, not just simply trying to find new channels.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I think focusing really is. If you're focusing, now you're brainstorming how to use all the other channels to feed into your core strategy. And I think you're still looking for underutilized ways to do that. So like you said, in sales, it might be finding a way to, you know, use content marketing in some interesting way, or even, you know, viral marketing through referrals of your existing customer base. But you only really need to switch that core channel if you think it totally won't get you to your next goal.
Yeah. Because I've actually found in some cases, you know, combining several channels actually amplifies in a way that you could, you know, maybe you've stalled out in sales because, you know, the tactic that you're using in sales is kind of fizzled out a little bit. It's harder to get people to answer the phone, you know, that kind of thing. But when you combine some of these other channels to open doors for you or to get you more appointments, all of a sudden sales can take off again.
Yeah. When you think about it that way, it changes the whole dynamic because you're not thinking about it, oh, I'm going over here to get new leads completely in that other channel.
Right.
You're thinking about, yeah, how do I amplify? And that to me is a focusing step.
Yeah. So in the book, do you suggest a framework for how to systematically test new channels?
Yeah, we do. We really are trying to answer those same three questions. I mean, they're basically universal questions. Put a little bit of money behind something, maybe free, to find how much it costs to acquire a customer, how scalable it is, and, you know, are they good customers?
Right.
And we offer, you know, because people really have a hard time understanding maybe how to test some of these ones they've never been familiar with. So we offer a few suggestions in the book for each channel about how you might do that for about less than a month and less than $1,000.
Yeah, and I think one of the keys, and it seems like I say this every show, obviously you have to be fanatical about tracking, about your analytics. And that's actually, as obvious as that sounds, that's, in my experience, one of the greatest challenges for growth is that, that people aren't doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the activities, and you know, I'm sure you reach this out in the consulting, is, you know, it's everything's out of people's comfort zone. And that's really the crux of the psychological problem, is a lot of people are averse to kind of getting down to the numbers here. Yeah. But you kind of got to get over that bump. Another one that feels out of the comfort zone is they're worried about if they, you know, run these tests that they're going to fail or waste money on it. But the reality is, to get to somewhere good, you have to do a bunch of tests, and a lot of them are going to fail. So you kind of have to get over some of these psychological barriers.
Yeah, and obviously that comes from, you know, an organizational, from the top down. I mean, an organization's got to be willing to say, "Hey, we're gonna put some money over here, or we're gonna create this laboratory over here that will let us test some of these things without sort of prejudging what's going to happen."
Right. You don't want to assign someone a content marketing for a few months, and if it doesn't work, fire them.
Exactly. We're on Facebook, and we're not getting any business from it, so we're going to stop that. Yeah. So, well, Gabriel, thanks so much for joining us. Traction, How Any Startup Can Achieve Explosive Growth. This is really, to me, a must read, and I found it an amazingly quick read, and that doesn't suggest that a book is light. It actually suggests that a book is well written, and this, certainly the stories and the things that that carry you through this book, really great. So appreciate you joining me, and hopefully we'll see you out there on the road.
Thank you. My pleasure.